From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Hey, we've got big miracle news for you this week, at least news relating to the search for miracles now officially. We're talking about two canonization causes that Americans are probably pretty excited to hear about. And we'll be talking to two vice postulators, two nuns who run the canonization causes for two people that Americans may know and may have a connection to. Sister Marcia Hall. We'll be talking to her. She's the vice postulator for the Mother Mary Laing cause for canonization. We'll be talking about a new African-American venerable, someone moving along the path to sainthood. That's Mother Mary Laing, joining Henriette de Lisle and Pierre Toussaint and Augustus Tolton, the three African-Americans who have been recognized as venerable and are now looking for miracles. And then there's a new venerable who everybody knew this was going to happen. It was just a matter of when. Of course, we're talking about Sister Lucia of Fatima, the third of those visionaries from Fatima, the three children. The two younger ones were canonized on May 13th, 2017. I was there in person in Portugal to see that. And of course, their older cousin, Lucia dos Santos, she lived many, many years longer. And so her canonization cause is much, much longer because there's so much documentation to go through for her life. And finally, as we expected, as the Virgin Mary said herself in those visions at Fatima, that Sister Lucia would be going to heaven, we have her moving along the path to sainthood now as well. And she is now venerable, and we'll be talking with Sister Angela de Fatima Coilu. She's the vice postulator. She's in charge of everything when it comes to those the canonization of the two youngest, and now the declaration of venerable for Sister Lucia of Fatima. Now venerable Lucia of Fatima. So we're so excited about this news, and we're excited to talk to Sister Angela in just a little bit. Check out my EWTN television series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, which airs every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Tonight, the episode of Explore is about Assisi, and this is the Italian city of Assisi that gave rise to two of history's most celebrated saints. I'll be following the trail of St. Francis, the first to bear the stigmata, the wounds of Christ, and St. Clare, his wonder-working follower. So you can check that one out tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN Television. And also my new book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Catholic Church Investigates the Supernatural. You can check that out from Tan Books, available at EWTNRC.com. That question, is the church anti-science? Well, read my book and you'll find out. And also, people want to know about Eucharistic miracles, especially in this time of Eucharistic revival. In this book, I dedicate a good portion of that to the investigation of Eucharistic miracles. So check that one out, Science and the Miraculous. And for today's show, we're going to be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project like we always do. For today, July 1st, we've got Our Lady the Guide from Portugalete in Spain in the year 13th century. We'll also be looking at the might-be saint of the day, Blessed Antonio Rossimi Serbati, who lived from the 1700s and 1800s, of course, from Italy. And we have a question of the week, which is a good one, where they ask, other than Fatima, what other Marian apparitions have had prophecies that came true? And so that will be a good one for me to try to answer. We'll see how I do in just a little bit. Let's take a look at miracle news. We do this every week. We report on miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And oftentimes we like to report on big things like Marian apparitions or Eucharistic miracles. But there are other things that seem downright miraculous that don't have to do with some of these interesting and strange things that the Catholic Church tends to report and investigate. And there was a story that was recently reported about four siblings who were rescued after 40 days lost in the Amazon jungle. And after their plane crash had survived, the three adults on board died, but the siblings survived on their own until rescued. Miracle, miracle, miracle. These were the words transmitted from the Amazon jungle in Colombia that echoed around the world. Not too long ago, this past month, miracle was the code word agreed upon by the search parties, signaling that 4 Hitoto indigenous children who had gone missing after surviving a plane crash in which their mother, pilot, and co-pilot died, they were found alive. Leslie, age 13, Soleni, 9, Tian Noriel, age 4, and Kristen Nariman, age 1, survived alone for 40 days in an impenetrable, unexplored jungle where trees blocked and the sunlight rains almost daily. It's home to anacondas and jaguars as well as poisonous plants. The children had no food. What they did have, especially the oldest daughter, was knowledge of the jungle itself, inherited from her ancestors, they say. And the fact that they were found alive is a true miracle. Despite the pain of losing their daughter, Fatima and Nicanor Mikutoy, they held on to hope of finding their 4 grandchildren alive, as did the rest of the family in the whole country of Colombia. Along with being dehydrated and malnourished, the children were covered with insect bites and were suffering from psychological trauma when they returned. However, the family is confident that the medical care being provided by the government will allow them to recover very soon. And they were fleeing from war. And this operation, it wasn't until May that the missing plane was finally located, and inside were the bodies of the 3 adults, no trace of the children. About 70 members from local organizations joined this endeavor, Operation Hope, and eventually they encountered finding the footprints and other clues they found. They finally found them in a place where the rescue teams had already searched several times. And they say it's a mystery, it's a surprise to us all, it's an area that we passed through. There are no caves, no thick jungle, nothing that we hadn't already taken note of, the soldiers reported. And they call this a true miracle of life, and absolutely amazing that these 4 siblings survived in this jungle for 40 days without anyone to take care of them. Absolutely incredible, an incredible miracle story. You can check this out on Alitea. That's the story, 4 siblings rescued after 40 days lost in the Amazon jungle. Perhaps a real miracle story. Absolutely amazing. And for more information on miracle stories happening each and every day, check out my Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter, where I post stories happening all around the world. How about some Catholic Club trivia? We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer that writes in with the right answer. And each week we have people writing in from around the world. And I love trivia, and people might find me at a bar doing pub trivia on some random night, but this is Catholic Club trivia. And we had a tricky question for you last week, and probably people will roll their eyes at this answer. Now, last week, the question was, we're talking about Mother Mary Lang being canonized here in our Catholic Church. She's moving along that path. She's now venerable. She'll be blessed with 1 miracle, and 2 miracles will make her a saint. So how many African Americans have been beatified or canonized in history? And so that was last week's question. And the answer is, unfortunately, 0. So Mother Mary Lang was named venerable this past week, and Henriette de Lille and Augustus Tolton and Pierre Toussaint were 3 people who are on the path of sainthood as venerables, but none of them have had yet a miracle that's moved them along to blessed or a saint. So let's change that number from 0 to a larger number when people pray for miracles through their intercession. And so we have a question for you this week. This is a good one. Other than Fatima, can you name other Marian apparitions that had multiple visionaries canonized? Again, we're talking about Sister Lucia of Fatima. She was declared venerable, and that's the subject of this program today. And we also have her 2 younger cousins who were declared saints in 2017. So can you name any other Marian apparitions that have had multiple visionaries who were canonized? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or just go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and send me a message that way. And answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking to Sister Marcia Hull about the big news of Mother Mary Lang being declared venerable this past week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to The Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show know I love talking about saints and future saints specifically, and even more specifically, future American saints. I do a television series called They Might Be Saints on EWTN, where we feature these various people on the path to sainthood. Beyond servant of God, we talk about venerables and blesseds before they have all their miracles and they're declared a saint by Rome. And we focused on so many interesting stories, and there's a new person moving along the path to sainthood. It was just announced this past week, and it was so exciting because Mother Mary Lange was declared venerable when Pope Francis met with the head of the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, Cardinal Semeraro. They released an official decree that recognized the heroic virtues of several people on the path to sainthood, in specific, Mother Mary Lange. And we're so excited about that turn of events. And she joins Henriette Delille and Augustus Tolton as the only two African-Americans in history to have received this recognition. Puts her in elite company, and we look forward to her moving along the path to sainthood with a miracle. She'll become blessed, and then a second miracle will have her be a saint. And we're so excited today to be joined by Sister Marcia Hall from the Mother Mary Lange canonization cause to share with us this exciting news, talking to us about what came out of Rome. Thank you, Sister Marcia, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us, last week when you received this news, this had to be some of the best news you've ever heard. If you've been working on this cause for a long time, like I know you have, and so many people there with the cause and all over the United States have been praying for this day, the recognition formally of the holiness by Rome of Mother Mary Lange. What was it like to first learn that news that the decree had come out of Rome?
Well, let me tell you the real story, okay? So, obviously, Rome is about 6 hours or so ahead of us.
All right.
And so I was about to lead a communion service in the chapel, and our superior came up on the altar. She was the lector, but then she came to me and said, I need to talk to you in a sacristy. I said, okay. So she shows me this article from Alatia.
Yes.
And then an email from the Archbishop, Archbishop Lori, and she's saying, Is this legitimate? Because we hadn't heard anything else.
That sounds so like the way Rome does it. Yeah, amazing, yeah.
I said, well, Alatia is a legitimate Catholic, you know, magazine newspaper, and I don't think the Archbishop would send congratulations if he didn't think it had happened. So, but we decided, okay, we're not, she said, can I say it to the sisters now? I said, no, because if you say it to the sisters now, they won't be paying any attention during the communion service. So we went through the communion service, and then afterwards she made the announcement. There was great joy in the chapel, and, of course, the talk of the house. And then it became a day where, you know, you have plans, but your plans have to be set aside because people are calling either to congratulate you or to ask, can we talk to you?
Right.
So it was a busy day yesterday, but certainly a very joyful one. I have to admit, even though I knew what Sister was going to say, as she was saying it, I still got filled up.
Amazing. You must have gotten chills. So much expectation going forward, hoping for that day to come. And you got the phone call from me and the emails from me that day as well. So many people, I'm sure, all over the United States wanted to talk to you on this big day. And tell us, how long has the cause been going on? When have you been involved, and when was the first beginning of the cause for Mother Mary Lange?
I believe that Cardinal Keeler opened the cause in 1990-1991. I was not an oblate at that time. Actually, I'm celebrating my 25th jubilee this year.
Congratulations.
So the cause is a little bit older than my time in the community. So, it was Cardinal Keeler that opened the cause. So it's, I guess, about a little over 30 years we've been waiting. You know,
wonderful. And when was the positio, the academic position paper that details all the life of virtue and all the details of her life, sent to the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. How long have they had that document and been reading through it?
I believe it's been about 2 or 3 years. The pandemic interfered. Right. It did with a lot of things. You know, right. They weren't meeting, and so it was in Rome, but we were just waiting for it for them to start meeting again, for it to move along, etc.
Wonderful. And the big question that, there are so many questions, and we'll get to them all. We'll talk about what the next steps are, but so many people, when they hear that there is a new American on the path to sainthood that's been recognized, people are saying, who is Mother Mary Lange? So now we're going to cue you up to answer the big question that everyone wants to know. Tell us about the woman. Who was Mother Mary Lange?
Elizabeth Clarissa Lange, which is her birth name, was born in Santiago de Cuba in around 1789, and it was a French-speaking community in Cuba. Her parents were of Haitian origin, and she came to the United States in the early 1800s. We're not sure exactly when, but we believe she landed in the Bells Point area of Baltimore around 1810 or so. And her father had some money. We don't know if he was a planter, but he sent her money periodically. So she was able to open a school in her home for Haitian children. So we know she was an educated woman, and we know that she was a person who attended Mass at La Chapelle Basse, which is the lower chapel of St. Mary's Seminary at the time, and belonged to two devotional societies. She also had a spiritual director, Father Tessier. So she was a devoted person, a person devoted to her faith, a very faith-filled woman, who looked around and saw that these children's needs were not being met, at least educationally. So she started that school. So around 1827, 1828, she met a priest, Father James Hector Nicholas Joubert, another Sulpician, who came to her because he had been put in charge of the religious education program for these Haitian children and was struggling. And Father Tessier knew her well and said, I know just the person you need to meet. So Father Joubert went to her home and they talked, and he said, you know, I'm thinking about establishing a permanent school for these children. And she said, that would be great. But my friend and I have also been praying about becoming sisters. Huh. So he took both ideas to Archbishop Whitfield, who gave his approval for both. So actually the school, which at the time was called St. Francis School for Colored Girls, was started in June of 1828, and Elizabeth and two of her friends were installed in that school. And then they went into what we now call formation to prepare themselves to become sisters, and one of Elizabeth's students asked to join them. So there were four women who were preparing themselves, teaching in the school, and on July 2nd, 1829, they became the first four oblate sisters of Providence, and she became the first superior, so she became Mother Mary Lange. Mary was the name she took. So actually, July 2nd this year, we are 194 years old. So we
Wonderful.
Are our bicentennial as a community.
Well, that'll be a big celebration this year for all the reasons we've talked about, with Mother Mary Lange being declared venerable by Rome this past week. And so when you move forward and you talk about the impact Mother Mary Lange had in starting this order and working with the sisters and developing the community, how does the community today live on in her memory or in her spirit? How is her charism carried on by the work of the sisters today?
Well, we still believe in a providential God. We believe that God has provided, does provide, and will provide. And we have numerous examples of times when things were needed either in the school or in the community, and God provided those things. So our providential spirituality is very evident through us and in our lay associates. And then we still have St. Francis Academy is still open, and it's 195 years old. So that legacy still lives on. There's an associate, Deacon Curtis Turner, who is the head of school for us. And we still have sisters in a couple other schools here and in Costa Rica. So So our legacy lives on through our sisters who are in schools, who are in religious education programs, and in our former students, many of whom still are in touch with us, contact us, help us out.
Wonderful. And so when we reflect on the life of Mother Mary Laing, we talk about her virtues. And of course, you showed some of those in the stories of her life, starting the order and in those early days. But when Rome looks at the Positio, the academic position paper that details all her virtues, what were the things that Rome was considering specifically? What are the highlight virtues for Mother Mary Laing?
Her courage. I mean, she started a religious community for women of color in a slave state before the Civil War. She started a school for girls of color in a slave state before the Civil War. Those aren't small things. You have to have a lot of courage to believe that God is behind you, with you, and will pull you through the many trials and tribulations that you will experience as black women. And she just kept moving forward. She was also a woman who, I call her a visionary. She certainly met the needs of the children around her. Even after the school was started, when the community came into being, there were always what were called children of the house, who were children who were either orphans or half-orphans who lived with the sisters. So the sisters were not only responsible for their own well-being, but also for the children who lived with them. She met the needs of a community that was being overlooked by other people. And I think that was important. That was something that was mentioned in the decree, that she sought to take care of the needs of people of African descent in the United States when that wasn't really happening in the church as a whole. So her courage, her faithfulness, her those are the things that I look to, and I think those are the things that Rome looks to.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Sister Marcia Hall from the canonization cause for Mother Mary Laing, who was just this past week declared venerable by Rome. On the path to sainthood, she's at step two, moving from servant of God to venerable, blessed, and then to saint. And so when we talk about the next steps that have to happen, of course, to move from venerable to blessed and saint, Rome looks for a miracle. They look for the singular intercession of Mother Mary Laing, and we talk about a medical miracle, most likely an instantaneous, complete and lasting cure with no medical treatment that relates to the cure. It's very difficult to find these, especially in these days of modern science. So how is the search for miracles going? I know from the beginning of the cause, miracles can be asked for through her intercession, through prayer cards and other prayers. But in order for her to move along to the next step, a miracle will need to be proposed. Have there been favors and blessings and graces that have been reported to the cause so far?
There have been, but none that have yet met the standard for the tribunal here. So we are still praying that a miracle will be revealed soon. Certainly sooner than the 30 years it took venerable.
Well, in my opinion, the hard part is always getting past this venerable stage, because they overturn every aspect of a person's life. They go into everything the person has said or written, or all the known details of their life, even in historical causes. It's such a detailed examination that Rome does that the idea that the person has lived a life of holiness, as validated by Rome, is a very special thing. And that's where we're at with the cause for Sister or Mother Mary Laing. And so when we move forward, I think so many people are going to be excited about this news. So many people in America, especially considering the racial divisions and the problems that our country goes through. How do you see Mother Mary Laing as a model of faith for the people of America? What things are people going to turn to when they look to her as a model of virtue?
A person who maintained her faith despite challenges, racial challenges, other kinds of challenges, who never let go of that faith. I think that certainly there are times in a lot of our lives when things happen and we say, why God, why me? I don't know if Mother Mary Lang ever asked God those questions, but she certainly didn't let those questions, those incidents, stop her from maintaining her faith and moving forward through her faith. So, you know, holding on to your faith despite everything and anything.
Absolutely. I think she's going to be a great intercessor for so many people, like you say, who are struggling. Everybody has that question at some point in their life. Why God? They're going through a medical situation or a family situation or whatever it might be. We're always looking for help. And Mother Mary Lang is a great intercessor that we can turn to now and perhaps in search of a miracle. So if people want to find out more about the life of Mother Mary Lang, or even find an intercessory prayer or a prayer card, is there a website or other place you can direct them to?
The website for the Guild is motherlang.org, www.motherlang.org. That's the Guild website. And through that website, they can order prayer cards and keychains and other things like that. They can also call the Mother House, 410-242-8500, and ask to speak to Sister Magdala Marie Gilbert. She is the director of the Guild. The Guild is the organization that promotes the cause. So she would be the person to talk to.
Wonderful.
And also, let me say this, that we anticipate that more people will be calling us to schedule tours and pilgrimages, because Mother Lang actually, she didn't live in this house, but her remains are here. And so people want to come and pray here and may also want to visit the places where she lived and died. So they can also call the Mother House and ask to speak to me, Sister Marcia, and schedule a tour or a pilgrimage.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Sister Marcia Hall, for talking to us today about Mother Mary Lang and the great news coming out of Rome that she's declared venerable. Her life of heroic virtue was formally recognized, and she is on the path to sainthood moving forward. And with one miracle, she'll be a blessed, and a second miracle, she'll be a saint. Such exciting news to hear this past week. So thank you so much for sharing with us the details of hearing that news and the life of Mother Mary Lang.
Thank you for having me.
God bless. That was Sister Marcia Hall from the Canonization Cause for Mother Mary Lang. Huge news this past week. She's declared venerable with a handful of others in Rome, and her cause is moving forward. And we all have to pray for that first miracle that will lead to her beatification. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting these questions, whether it's through email or at the end of a talk. I travel around the country, give about 20 talks per year at different shrines or conferences or parishes that have me come in to speak. And Eucharistic miracles are one of the very common things that people are asking me to speak about this year during this time of Eucharistic revival. And at the end of the talk, which usually lasts about 45 minutes, I do question and answer. And I love to hear what people are thinking about. People are interested in miracles and they have questions. And when they've got me up there, they tend to pepper me with questions. And that's how I like it. I try to answer them the best that I can. So we have a good one coming in via email this week. It says, Dear Miracle Hunter, other than Fatima, what Marian apparitions have had prophecies that came true? Sincerely in the Lord, Stephen. Thank you, Stephen, for your question. And it's a good one. Of course, we talk about those prophecies at Fatima, that those things that came true and really remind us of how real those visions were. But what about other cases of Marian apparitions where prophecies turned out to be true? Now, there are some people who talk about Our Lady of All Nations in 1945 in Amsterdam as those being visions that had prophecies that came true. And we talk about Our Lady of Cabejo, which is a Vatican-recognized Marian apparition in Rwanda. Rwanda that predicted the Rwandan genocide. And I believe that it's as a result of that Rwandan genocide that those apparitions were believed. So that was a big prophecy that came true. This year is the 50th anniversary of Our Lady of Kabeho, Our Lady of Akita in Japan from 1973. Those mystical experiences by Sister Agnes Sasagawa. Now that's more of a weeping statue with messages coming from the statue rather than a typical Marian apparition. If there is such a thing as a typical one, that's a little bit different. But there are prophecies from that one. We see bishops against bishops and cardinals against cardinals. Sometimes we see some controversies in our church, and that one perhaps is bearing out. And then we have Our Lady of Good Success in Quito in Ecuador, Mother Mariana de Jesus Torres in the 1590s and beyond was said to receive visions of the Virgin Mary. And those prophecies about the difficulties with the family in the 20th century and beyond seem to be spot on. So that seems to be a prophecy that was made then in that apparition. And also Our Lady of La Salette, those visions in France in 1846, where Mary predicts as the result of people's not keeping holy the Sabbath and taking the Lord's name in vain and other ways that people had lost their faith. Mary predicted that there would be some difficulties befalling Europe and France, things like famine and great health difficulties there in France, and those were said to come true as well in that time following those apparitions. And so those are just a few cases, Stephen, of Marian apparitions where we see some sort of a prophecy that is believed to have come true. And of course, Fatima is the gold standard of all Marian apparitions when we talk about incredible prophecies bearing out to be true. So thanks, Stephen, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Now let's take a look at 365 Days with Mary. We talk every week about the Marian devotion of the day, and believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion that lines up exactly to the day's date. We talk about May 13th, Our Lady of Fatima, or Lourdes, February 12th, or Guadalupe, on December 12th. So there are different days where there are Marian feast days or miracles or other reasons to celebrate Mary specifically under a given title. Believe it or not, for each and every day of the calendar year, there's a different title of Mary from around the world that lines up to that day's date. So for today, July 1st, we've got Our Lady of the Guide from Portugalete in Spain in the 13th century. And the story goes that on either side of Coscojate Street in Portugalete, the harkening back to a mariner celebration features two big rag dolls that are hung from rope tied to balcony railings in the first hours of the day with an opening volley and the traditional sally of the Dominguins. And the faithful simultaneously offer flowers to the Blessed Virgin Mary, whose statue is in a niche on the facade of the market square at the end of the street. And the fiesta is replete with the fanfare of drumming, accordions, and masks filling the streets, and the devotees of the Virgin Guide at midnight process from the streets beginning following the municipal band's march. A concluding volley is the culmination of the events with a serenade. And that is Our Lady of the Guide from Portugalete in Spain in the 13th century. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can check out the website 365dayswithmary.com, pick up the book, or download the free app 365 Days with Mary. If you follow 365 Days with Mary on Facebook, you can join any of the 10,000 other followers who get a Marian devotion each and every day. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We talk about those people on the path to sainthood, and we're talking about servants of God, venerables and blesseds, those people who need miracles before they're recognized as saints by the Vatican. And we always like to give you up to date on those people who are moving along the path to sainthood, who are coming down the pike, you might say. We had some big names last week. Mother Mary Lang from the United States is now venerable, and Sister Lucia of Fatima joining her cousins on that path to sainthood, officially moving along, and she was declared venerable as well. But on Thursday, June On Thursday, June 22nd, Pope Francis received in an audience His Eminence Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect for the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. And during this audience, the Pope authorized the same dicastery to promulgate a decree regarding the martyrdom of the servants of God Manuel González Serna Rodríguez and 19 companions, who were diocesan priests, seminarians, laymen, and women, and they were killed in Odium Fidei, hatred of the faith, in 1936 in Spain. And this dicastery for the cause of saints on their website says that these were diocesan priests, seminarians, laymen, and women. Out of Odium Fidei was the prevailing motive that armed the executioners, and the violent death of the martyrs is placed in the context of the Spanish religious persecutions that affected that area of Sevilla. Individual episodes were accompanied by the destruction of sacred images, fires of churches, and religious buildings. And again, that's from the website, from the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints. And so they become blessed as a result of this decree of martyrdom. With one more miracle that's attributed to that group of martyrs, they will all be declared saints. Let's take a look at the Might Be Saint of the Day. For today, we've got Blessed Antonio Rossimi Serbati, who lived from 1797 to 1855, and of course, he's from Italy. And he was born on March 24th in 1797 in Rovereto in the Austrian Tyrol, modern Trent in Italy. He was educated at home, and then 3 years he spent at the University of Padua in Italy. He was ordained on April 21st, 1821, at Chioggia in Italy, and he received his doctorate of canon law and theology in 1822. He began work in Rome in 1823. He studied philosophy for the next 3 years. He really liked the works of St. Thomas Aquinas, and he taught that the human mind is endowed with an innate cognition, the singular conception of ideal being, a mental form, a condition of knowledge, and the light of reason. And he founded the Institute of Charity and the Rosmian Sisters of Providence in the year 1828, which by 1835 were conducting missions in Italy and England. And this congregation is devoted to education and charity. He was appointed by Blessed Pope Pius IX as one of the consultors to deliberate on the doctrine of the Immaculate Conception. He died on July 1st in 1855 in Stresa Viterbo in Italy of natural causes. He is interred in the Church of the Santissima Crucifixio, and that was a church that was built by him in the city of Stresa. And he was declared venerable in 2006 by Pope Benedict XVI, and in 2007 by Pope Benedict XVI as well, he was declared blessed. And that's Blessed Antonio Rossimi Serbati from Italy from the 1800s. For more information on this Might Be Saint or any of the other people who are on the path to sainthood, check out the show, They Might Be Saints on EWTN. This week, we have a show on Rhoda Wise. You can find out more on that website, theymightbesaints.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be interviewing Sister Angela de Fatima Coilu, the vice postulator for the canonization cause of now venerable Sister Lucia of Fatima. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. This past week, we had big news for people who follow sainthood causes, and I do, of course, with the series They Might Be Saints on EWTN and the book of that same title, They Might Be Saints. I follow all the sainthood causes all over the world. And of course, people know me for my work on MiracleHunter.com, where I track the Marian apparitions around the world. And of course, the gold standard of all Marian apparitions is that of Our Lady of Fatima from 1917 in Portugal. And we were so excited last week, on the 22nd, on Thursday, we received the news that Pope Francis received in an audience the Reverend Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect for the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, and together they issued a decree which recognized the heroic virtues of the servant of God, Lucia of Jesus of Fatima. And this pushes her ahead in the sainthood process from servant of God to venerable. And with one miracle, she will be declared a saint, or a blessed, and a second miracle, she will be a saint. She'll be joining her cousins who were canonized on May 13th, 2017. I was there at Fatima for that beautiful event. We're so excited today and honored to be joined by the vice postulator for the canonization cause of now venerable Lucia of Fatima, and that is Sister Angela de Fatima Coilu, the vice postulator for the cause of Sister Lucille. Welcome back to the program, Sister Angela.
Thank you, Michael. It is an honor for me to be in your program and to speak to your audience who are listening to us in this wonderful occasion of the, Sister Lucia becoming venerable.
Now, I can practically hear the smile on your face. Of course, you've been working on this canonization cause for many years, almost a decade, since 2014. So this news today coming out of her being declared a venerable has to be exciting for you and everyone at Fatima. Please describe the spirit there in the excitement of this news.
So, yes, everybody, we were waiting for this moment to come. So the church could recognize something that we, of course, believe, that Lucia, she practiced the virtues in an heroic raid. So when the news arrived, the bells of the basilica, start to ring in a special way, like a feast day. Hmm. And the rector also announced in a very small celebration in Capolinha that the Holy Father has just authorized the decree to be published. The pilgrims were clapping and everybody was smiling, like myself. I still do smile. I don't know how to do something else right now, because I can just imagine the joy of, Sister Lucia in heaven, holding Francisco and Jacinta and the Blessed Mother. So it's just an amazing feeling. Yes, Michael.
Absolutely. And such a beautiful thing for everybody who love Our Lady of Fatima and the Fatima visionaries. I think this is something that people have been praying about for many years and you've been working on personally for many years. And, even being at the big celebration, the centenary on May 13th, 2017, and the canonization of her cousins, the two out of three, it always felt like there was something missing, that Sister Lucia had not yet moved along the path to sainthood. And, of course, it was somewhat of an inevitability in a lot of people's minds that this would happen, that she would move along the path. But, of course, her sainthood cause is different than the others, the young ones, and she has thousands of documents for writings and other interviews and other things that the cause had to go through. Talk a little bit about the process of having to go through all the paperwork and all the effort with interviews, et cetera, to get her to this point.
Yes, many people ask me, Sister, if Our Lady told her she was going to heaven, why the cause is not moving? Well, exactly like you said, we need to study her writings and the testimonies of the people who lived with her. So in the diocesan phase that finished in February 2017, we collected 16,000 pages of documents and testimonies. So all of this went to Rome and then started the Roman phase of the process, where we need to make like a summary of these 16,000 pages into a volume of 2,000 pages, where we could demonstrate, illuminate, or enlighten the most important virtues that she practiced in an heroic raid. So that took a long, a long time of reflection, meditation, because a personality like Sister Lucia, it is impossible to go through whole her sanctity without time. We need time to pray, to meditate, reflect, because she's so dense, so intense. Her life was so complex in the meaning that she deal with so many people, so many cardinals, bishops, even the Holy Father, several Holy Fathers. So it was very important that we took our time to study, to reflect, to do a nice work that could honor this woman. So it took us a couple of years to do that. Then we delivered the Positio last October. Thanks be to God, and because the Holy Father is coming here to Portugal for the World Youth Meeting in August.
Right.
And the cause of the saints consider this a very good apostolical and pastoral time. So they really, the theologians study the process, and they, eventually came today to the Pope, and the Pope said yes. So it is a blessing. And all this long process was necessary to go deep and deep in the understanding of this future saint, that it's Sister Lucia, Venerable Sister Lucia.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, the vice postulator for the canonization cause of now Venerable Lucia of Fatima. And I guess it turns out you had two sort of fortuitous circumstances with the 100-year centenary that moved forward. The two youngest shepherd children, their canonization moved quickly there at the end. And also with the World Youth Day, Pope Francis coming to Portugal gave them more impetus, as you said, to move forward with Sister Lucia's canonization cause. So a beautiful correspondence of events. And so you talk about the positio, that academic position paper, which outlines all the virtues and the life of Sister Lucia. What were the main virtues that were considered by Rome in declaring her having lived a life of heroic virtue?
Well, I think the first ones, of course, it's faith, hope, and charity. Charity towards God and charity towards others. And in these three virtues, the theologian's virtues, she was heroic. All of them. Her faith, you know, through all these years of, you know, being faithful to God, to the vocation she received when she was 10 years old, and she was faithful until she was 97, almost 98. Hope, you know, because she really trusted in God and expecting his promises, like the Blessed Mother made her, and charity, of course. Then I can underline obedience, which is something characteristic of religious life, to whom she was totally faithful in an heroic grade, considering the difficult circumstances of her life, dealing with the consecration, with the secret, and so on. And joy. Michael, I can tell you, she was a very joyful person, full of sense of humor. She could, you know, how can I say, she could joke about herself, like, She could make, like, teasing herself and at the same time, you know, always see the exciting part of the circumstances, even if they were difficult. So her sense of humor is something that I think she could also be an inspiration for all of us. I don't know, Michael. She had so many virtues. That I could say she practiced in an heroic grade. But I could say this faithfulness until the end, which, for example, many times when it was hard for her, for the several circumstances, she repeated, "I said yes to the Blessed Mother. Now I cannot say no." You know, constantly. She was repeating this. "I already said yes. I cannot say no." And I think this is a very great inspiration for all of us who deal with our, you know, commitments and struggling to be faithful to the will of God. "I already said yes, I cannot say no." Her humility, she was so humble. You know, thousands of people who write to her. Her sisters would ask her, "Sister Lucia, see how famous you are, or you know, how much people look for you?" And she constantly answered, "Oh, this is because of Our Lady, it's not because of me. People write me because of Our Lady." So she was always attributing Our Lady, you know, this kind of attraction she had. So her humility, again, I don't know, so many stories I can recall about this humility, being humble, always considering herself an instrument and not a protagonist. And in the last years, for example, the patience she had with her own limits, because she was 97. Her legs were painful, she couldn't walk so fast and so on, but she was always accepting the circumstances of being an elderly person.
Yeah, absolutely an incredible life, and we're so glad that Rome has finally recognized her life of heroic virtue in this big decree that's come out from the Congregation or the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints and Pope Francis, now recognizing her life of heroic virtue. We're talking today with Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, the vice postulator for the canonization cause of Sister Lucia of Fatima. And of course, you're in the midst of celebrating, and this is big news and such a culmination in some ways of a decade of hard work on your part. But you can't take a breath now. You can't relax, because the next step is around the corner, that of beatification. And of course, everybody knows that in order for somebody to move forward to that next step, they need a miracle through their singular intercession. And so I guess the question for you today is that, do you have some miracles in your pocket already that you're able to push forward now to Rome? Or do you have to go through that difficult process of finding a miracle without the other two Fatima children being involved? Because it must be a case of singular intercession. You can't have the others involved in a future miracle. How is the search for miracles going?
Well, thank you, Michael, for that question, because it's exactly that. Now the intercession has to be only to Sister Lucia, because it's through the three of them, it does not, then we have difficulties to be accepted in the cause of the saints. So our mission now is to ask people, and I do please ask those who are listening to us, if they feel touched by the Holy Spirit, to pray through the intercession of Sister Lucia, and to please communicate us to the cause of Lucia. You can check our website, lucia.pt. I don't have right now a miracle or a grace that can be considered as a miracle. So it's like you said, it's our challenge now for all of us who work in the cause to get, you know, to let people interested in this cause. The thing is, and that's our mission, to get Sister Lucia to be known, so people can trust in her and ask through her intercession. But I do believe the miracle will happen soon, because, you know, she was such a powerful intercessor while she was with us on earth. She received thousands of requests and she prayed for all of them, but I am sure this is one of her missions in heaven, to pray for us, to intercede for us. So if someone that are listening to us the Holy Spirit is moving, please, we need all the prayers we can get now. So this woman that was really a light, you know, that the name Lucia in Portuguese, the root is exactly light. So she's like a light of Jesus also within us, and we need her, for example, her testimony. So as soon as we have the miracle, we could go for the beatification, because I really think the church and the world need this example.
Absolutely. Well, we're so grateful to you, Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, for joining us on this happy occasion, the declaration of Sister Lucia of Fatima, moving from servant of God to venerable. And we look forward to having you back on the show in the future, perhaps even seeing you in Portugal or in Rome in the future for her beatification or canonization. And people around the world will be praying for this cause and praying for a miracle through her singular intercession so that she might move along to the next path of sainthood. Thank you so much, Sister Angela, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the honor of being here.
God bless. That was Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, the vice postulator for the canonization cause of Sister Lucia of Fatima. And for those people who want to find out more about where they can submit their prayers or find out an intercessory prayer or submit their miracles through her singular intercession, you can go to the website lucia.pt for more information and those resources. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest, Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, the vice postulator for the canonization cause of now venerable Sister Lucia of Fatima, and Sister Marcia Hall, from the canonization cause from Mother Mary Lang, who was just declared venerable as well. Check out my EWTN television series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, each Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And Explore with the Miracle Hunter tonight is about Assisi, the Italian city that gave rise to two of history's most celebrated saints. I'll be following the trail of St. Francis, the first to bear the stigmata, and St. Clare, his wonder-working follower. Check out my latest book, Science and the Miraculous, and that's available from Tan Books and available at EWTNRC.com. And I'd like to thank you today for joining me on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.